Hello, welcome to Mark Langley's Horsemanship Podcast, a podcast helping people to understand their horses better, to provide solutions in a calm, connected way. I'm Jenny Barnes.
And I'm Mark Langley.
This week's podcast is all about separation anxiety, a topic that's very familiar to many of you. We're going to give some advice from Mark about how we can help to reduce this. And the first question comes from Bridget. Bridget's from Australia. She lives on an acreage and she has five horses. Her driveway is almost a kilometre long. And she can get her mare out onto the road, but they weave their way down and she's constantly trying to turn back to her paddock mates as they do this. She's not mean or not nasty, Mark, but it's very frustrating. And she's just wondering, should she just let her turn back but then keep the circle going until they're heading in the right direction? Should she be micromanaging it? Is there a way that she should be doing something, encouraging her to head in that straight line but without the weaving?
Okay, so tacking and weaving is something that I encourage a lot with horses, and when they're going out in new places that they're scared of, but there's a catch. Okay, so the catch sounds with her. So there's a mindset that you're looking for when a horse goes out, and they have to have a forward thought, okay? So when I'm weaving on a horse under saddle, I'm saying let go of that thought when I pick up the rein. I'm not just weaving hoping the horse might just go in a new direction. So I have a feeling if she is, say for instance there are things down the drive away from the herd that she's a bit worried about, she's not going to process them while she's thinking backwards anyway. So you can't have your mind on home and process the danger ahead. So what you've got to kind of analyse, and I think I'm pretty sure she's got a mind anchored, okay, which means you've got to say to her, that's not available back there. Now, when she lets go of that anchored thought, that backward thought, then you can sort of weave, you can sort of get her to process all the scary things. But while her mind's anchored, she's not absorbing what's ahead of her. She's just thinking where she wants to be, okay? So I would do it a few times where you lead her out the driveway, and when she gets a strong backward thought, do something once that says let go of that thought. It could be firm up on the rope a bit, maybe bang your leg or with a flag and get her to reset a little, and then wait and then just see what she does. If she blinks and goes, oh, blink, blink, oh, hang on a minute, I'm thinking forward now, or maybe I'm not thinking backwards anymore. And just see if you can get her out of that backward anchored mindset. I see it all the time. I see horses at horse floats thinking backwards and the owner standing there waiting, hoping the horse might look in the float. And the best thing they could do is just get them to let go of the backward thought, because they're not processing what's ahead of them while their mind's somewhere else. You know, I think I read, I don't know if it's in one of Ross's books or one of his blogs one day, he said,
Ross Jacobs.
Yeah, Ross Jacobs. If you want a horse to take on a new thought, you've got to get it to let go of an old one. And that's the same principle. It's like, well, she's anchored back at home. She's not even trying to address what she might be scared of. And you won't even know what they're scared of while you're anchored back at home. And half the time horses are going out anchored back at home, and then something really spooks them. And where they're going to end up? Back at home, okay? And something will spook them if they're anchored at home, because they're not processing the environment that they're going into. So more potential for spook, okay? So what I want you to think about is look at her strong backward thought, and then do something to get her to let go of it, wait a little bit, and then start to offer leading again, okay? And maybe you don't have to weave her. Maybe you only weave her if she's going, oh, what's that ahead of me? That's scary. Oh, but she won't do that while she's anchored. So usually when I've got horses to let go of those backward thoughts, that you know all they're doing is thinking back to safety. They've gone, holy cow, I was really scared of that tree shadow over there. There's a shadow and I just don't know what to do. And they tell me all the things that they're scared of, but while they were anchored, they weren't. They were shutting it out. So look at that closely, get her to let go of that backward thought, and then see what she offers. If she's offering a bit of, like, I'm frightened, then you might just kind of go a little bit and go back a bit and then go forward a bit and go back a bit, just to show her some graded exposure into the new environment or further away from the other horses. You know, you might do a bit of weaving so she can go one eye, two eyes, one eye, two eye to help her process the new environment. Obviously, it's an environment she knows. That's why I think she might be scared down there. It's only because she doesn't have any other horses, but she's got to learn to let go of the other horses. The other thing is, if they're going somewhere with us and they're frightened of our information, frightened of us, then there's no connection with us. So they're actually going down there with a person that they don't even feel safe with. So there's all that other trust and connection and trusting the pressure and all that we need to work on too. So there's a whole bunch. Sometimes you can go and work on that, just educate your horse and the driveway's not a problem. You know, that happens a lot. But, yeah, take on that advice and see what happens.
Okay, and what happens if you're on a horse? This is from Loz from Australia, and you're riding out on a trail ride, and then separation anxiety kicks in. You've got so far, and you can see they just want to go back.
Separation anxiety out on trail. So anxiety is anxiety, and anxiety causes a horse to want to be separated. Okay, so. I used to always say this, and I still do. Separation anxiety is connection disability, but but a horse is not separated if it's comfortable with us. So if you're working on the herd mentality, if a horse is with us and it feels comfortable with us, then it's not needy for the herd, right? So that's one part, half of separation anxiety is going somewhere with an ally, right? So that you have to work on. If you don't have that in your horse, you have to sort of somehow work on that. I'm not going to go into depth in that because it's a whole, you know, subject in itself if you're just looking at things that you can do.
Check the membership.
Yeah, check everything. There's a whole bunch of stuff. And in all the podcasts, I'll be talking about this in various podcasts all the way through. But the other thing is... you know, the anxiety of the environment that the horse is going into, it's used to having, you know, they spend more time with the other horses than they do with us. So obviously their allies are going to be the other horses. So, and then the other thing is graded exposure. So a lot of times I drop the reins when I want a horse to go out, and if it can't walk out on a loose rein, I know it's going to turn back. If I'm gently, and I see people on the real sort of sensitive horses, they said, my horse rides out okay. I said, yeah, but just sit on it and drop the reins for a second. And sure enough, the horse goes, oh, they're not riding me. I'm going to turn around. Mm. And they just turn around and walk back. But that horse was so sensitive, it only created a featherweight of guidance to get that horse to leave the other horses. But that featherweight on that sensitive horse was enough to tell it that the person was riding it out. But then people have got to say the cold-blooded heavy horse that it takes like a every ounce of strength you got to try and make it go away from its friends. They feel like, oh, my horse doesn't want to go out. But both those horses feel the same about going out. It's just one's so wary about pressure, it's happy to just keep moving away from pressure, getting more worried, feeling nice and light but not soft. So yeah, we sometimes see the dull, heavy horses, the ones that don't want to go out, and then you can't pull them back when they go home. But it doesn't matter how sensitive or heavy your horse is, you drop the rein, sit dead neutral, point where you point the horse in the direction you want first and drop the rein and see what happens. And when you're offering the horse no guidance, they'll go, I'm going to turn around. Guidance is pointing the horse in a direction and it taking on that forward thought. You've offered it guidance, you just didn't want to carry it the whole way like a wheelbarrow, okay? So people say, well, you have to offer your horse guidance. No, you offer a horse guidance and you point it in a direction, but you shouldn't have to maintain that direction by keeping pushing on it. So that's where graded exposure comes in. I just ride around near the horses and where they are, and I just sort of say that direction. Horse goes in one direction, and I say, now change your thought, go in a new direction, until I can ride around just around the horses or just outside the horses, and the horse can pick any direction. Well, I drop it in any direction, and it goes in that direction in a straight line. So it's like when every direction becomes equal, then you just gently point it outside, away from where you want to ride away. And then if you feel a strong thought, you just offer a new direction and a new direction until the horse goes out a bit further, but then you bring it back again. So a lot of those horses, once they've offered me a direction which is away from the other horses and they've given it to me and they've taken it on board, they've let go of the anchor, I turn around and I take them back and say, I'll lead you home. Okay.
So do you find that when you're sitting on the back of a horse, as you know, you're riding out and you can feel that it's starting to get anxious, that you being quite an active rider as opposed to a passive rider just sitting there, and that's, you know, trail rides tend to be let's just sit there sort of scenario, we all fall into that trap. But if you're quite active up there and you're doing one direction, another direction, you're sort of getting it to think, you're getting it to not have sort of any expectations, it's not sure what's going to happen next. I sort of think of a swarm of bees when I see mm-hmm. you riding. I could imagine 10 of you and you wouldn't know what any of you are doing, but you're going in this one kind of mob. So does that sort of help it to switch into that mindset that takes it off the art?
Yeah, it's like a bit of a mesmerizing distraction. So there's active riding and there's active micromanaging. So active riding is, oh, what's over here? Oh, new direction. Oh, let's back up here. Oh, and that's active riding, just saying let go of that, offering a new path, but you're still very passive listening to the horse in between. Right. Active micromanaging is being active, just forcing your horse where you want it to go all the time. So what I do is I say, oh, you feel like you're getting worried and you've got a strong thought. I'm going to take that rein, let go of that, try this. And then within a few metres, even if it didn't get quite anxious, I might do something just to sort of say, just thought I'd just remind you that I'm up here. And then sometimes I might let it go a bit further and I feel a little anxiety come up in the horse. It gets a strong, long thought or something like that. And I might sort of say, now let go of that, do this. And then the horse lets go of that anxiety, changes its thought, goes in a new direction. And then you've interrupted that anxiety, so you've spilt it. So then you start at neutral again. And that's kind of what you're doing when you're riding out on trail and riding out away from other horses. You don't let it get a long march out until it gets over the hill and goes, oh, I'm full of anxiety and the horses are way, way back at the yards. That's where I'm going to get now.
Okay, and so and once it carries that thought, or the thought changes itself for a while or a little bit, or you know, momentarily, you think, oh, that's a big improvement. You'll actually take it back to the yards to go, well done, that you've done well. Okay, and in these scenarios, do you think it's better to ride out by yourself while you're doing these quite intensive training on the trail, or do you think it's better to ride out with a couple of other horses?
I encourage people to have someone around just in case something goes wrong, but you don't have to ride with the horses. Some people just rely. I've met plenty of people who've bought young horses and trail riding horses that just go nuts when they ask them to do something different than just follow other horses. So a horse will go for miles just blending in, following the herd, and you know, everyone remembers those colt starts that they used to see, that, you know, getting all these riders on 10 horses and they'd all travel together as young horses. Well, they use that mob mentality to let the horses just all travel and follow each other, which stopped a lot of horses from bucking, and they just followed the feel of the herd and things like that. But and a lot of trail horses do that. So you, when you're riding with one or two horses or three horses, don't get set in just giving the confidence over to this more confident horse, okay? That young horse will start to go, I'm getting my confidence off those horses, not off us. So when you first ride around, like the swarm of bee thing that you said, I just get the horses to ride around each other, you know, let go of that horse, come over here, now come back towards that horse. So I might ride towards the horse that the horse likes or something like that, let it go past, and then I'll turn it back and ride past that horse. And after three or four, five, six times that horse has ridden past or back home even, it says, you've done that for me, you've taken me to the other horse. Oh, you're not taking me away from it. Oh, I'm not trapped. Oh, and then after a while, they'll walk away from that horse 100 metres. So it's important when you do ride with other horses, have the other horses around for a bit of confidence to start, and some people around. So if something goes wrong, that you know, you're safe, or you've got someone that's got a phone that can call up. And then just separate yourself from the inertia of just one herd direction and have all the horses doing little bits of different things at all times, and then blend together a little bit in a herd, go together and then break and just, you know, move around each other a bit. One stops, one moves here, one starts, and just do little exercises which interrupt your horse's thoughts, get them tuning into what you're asking, letting go of the feel of that kind of herd inertia. I call it herd inertia because I'll say to everyone when I used to do more outside trail clinics is, give it a few seconds, all these horses leave this yard. If we all ride in the one direction for this long, that'll be the direction of the herd, and none of these horses are going to want to break that direction. So it's important that the whole herd is breaking direction all the time, just kind of interrupting that so they don't get this feel of let's go over the horizon, okay? So, you just keep it a little bit, not over busy that you're constantly hammering your horse, but just enough to say, you know, I'm here, listen to this, and you're doing the basic things that the horse kind of has already been taught to help them guide, not to push them into scary places. And just on that trail ride, when the horse goes out, you feel it start to get a little anxious. Let go of that thought, get it to let go of that thought, whether it be a turn or something like that. When it softens to the rein, then ride it back to the yards and then go out again and show the horse that you always take it home. Once that horse knows that you take it home, it won't worry as much and it'll go out with you for a long time knowing you'll take it home.
As opposed to it sort of getting its way home because it's made you a little bit nervous and you're getting back.
Yeah, well, that it gets too nervous, so you take it home and go, let's start again. So that basically you didn't interrupt the horse out there to get it to soften out there because you went too far out that you couldn't interrupt it. So it's not like you don't take it to the worst possible scenario. You take it to a little bit of anxiety, get it to let go of that little bit of anxiety, take it back, and then it'll go further each time. And then all of a sudden you won't have to take it home. You just take it back a little bit and then go out again.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And also, it's very, very common when we ride horses out that we use our legs and guidance to push, push, push to go out. I'll guarantee if you loosen the reins on the way out, the horse will turn back, and I'll guarantee if you loosen the reins on the way home, the horse will walk a straight line.
Mm-hmm.
That's most common. So you see people using their tools to push their horse out, go over there. It's always wobbling left, right, wobble, wobble, wobble. And then when they turn for home, if it wasn't an anxious horse that was wanting to run for home, they just relax and talk to their friends because the horse is just lovely, walking home, nice and free. So the horse gets all this, I'm taking you home and this is really nice. And when so in most riding situations, the person is riding the horse out and taking the horse out, and the horse is taking the person home because the person does nothing when the horse is going home. They're just sitting on the horse talking because that's the easiest direction. But the person's working, pushing the horse out for an hour. So out for that horse's whole life is pressure, and home is always no pressure.
Right. So you're just mixing it all up and actually going, woo, let's
and,
just sort
yeah,
of
and yeah. Even on the way home, I'll do a little interruption and say this, you know, like, let's do this instead. Like, let's maybe go over here. Don't get too long of thoughts. You're getting too far. It's similar to going out as coming home. It's the same emotion. We want the horse in the same mindset going out and the same mindset coming home.
And just a little tiny comment that's occurred to me that's probably worth mentioning here is that if the horse is uncomfortable with your legs, when you may not know this, but it may well be not comfortable with the pressure that's associated with legs or with reins, and you're using either of those or both out on trail, you are adding to what is already an anxious horse. So do think about addressing anything that it's not comfortable with before you put yourself in these scenarios, which are much, much worse in sense of all the emotion, the heightened emotions once you're outside.
Yeah, so the things that you can control, the education you can control, like what you said, Jenny, the legs and the reins is the most common thing we use. If they are creating anxiety, then the things you can't control, you can't control them. So you can't control the things that create anxiety, like a kangaroo. You can't say, stop, kangaroo, unless you've trained every kangaroo on your property. That's fine. You might be one of those people. But if you haven't trained the kangaroos on your property, you can't control them, okay? You can't control your neighbour's dogs if the neighbour can't control her own dogs. You can't control the truck. You can't control those anxieties, and they're going to tip into your horse all the time. All those environmental things are going to be going into your horse all the time. The things you can control, look at them, go home, do your homework. I pull a rein, my horse worries. Okay, kangaroo bouncing, truck driving past, neighbour's dog and the rein, no way of tipping out the anxiety. So legs have to be soft, your legs on the horse, I mean, for the forward impulsion, all that sort of thing, the left rein, the right rein, the different rein positions that you're using or whatever stage your horse is at, horse has to be comfortable with. The horse has to be comfortable with you wriggling, sneezing, you know, whatever. You know, wobbling around. If you can't wobble on your horse, then the horse is carrying a scary thing out into a scary environment. So not a good idea. So everything that you can control, the educational things and just the things that you do on your horse that you know, a horse has to be okay with. Otherwise, there's no way of tipping out the worry cup.
Cool. I hope that's helped, Bridget and Loz. That's sort of, you know, it's a big area. It's and it's not a quick fix. We've seen so many horses like this, but you can work on it and you can chip away for sure. So good luck, and I hope that helps with your approach. Mark, your next question comes from Andrea from Australia. Her mare seems to get much less focused when she's in season. Do you think that horses should be in training if they're going to be quite distracted when they're in season?
I think this is the area where you can sort of say there's a certain contradiction in some things I may say. So basically, we don't want to shut a horse down, but we can't have over impulsive horses. Okay, so an impulsive horse is a horse that kicks another horse and breaks its leg. Bang, I had a hard thought and I just did it. And I'm very dangerous because I have impulsive thoughts. And so my definition of an unwanted impulsive thought is a horse that does something without concern of or an awareness of possible boundaries. Okay. And a simple example how to sort of determine it sometimes is the foal walks up and grabs my shirt and shakes it and I giggle. The foal didn't walk up going, "You could be a horse eater." It didn't even consider that you might beat up on horses and eat them. So it didn't even sort of register that you might be good or bad. So it didn't do that with a thought of maybe I should be soft and just see if they're safe. So you don't shut a horse down, but some horses have impulsive thoughts, and those impulsive thoughts, they do it without concern of boundaries or awareness of what they're doing. So a horse comes up to you softly and sniffs you and asks for a scratch, or a horse comes up and demands a scratch, puts its bum round towards you and you scratch it. That is teaching them to do something without boundaries and without reading the situation. Okay, so horses become more impulsive when they're in season because of hormones, different things that are going on. I believe they still need to have caution and awareness and understand boundaries when they're in season. It's essential, because if we allow them to sort of be impulsive, that's when they become dangerous when they're in season around little kids or, you know, other horses. They could be over impulsive. So I think it's essential that you do some work with your horse and start to teach it to be less impulsive. Maybe don't do the drilling and the, you know, all the stuff that, I'm not saying drilling, everyone drills a horse, but don't go out and do all the sort of fancy pants dressage stuff or whatever you're doing on your horse when she's in season, because she's not in the best emotional mood to do all that stuff. But do educate your horse to be soft. And you may not ask a lot out of them, but just ask them to be soft and cautious and understand boundaries. And when they're in season, and sometimes maybe over time they might get better to ask a bit more when they're in season. But I do say that no matter what mood the horse is in, it has to have a level of caution and awareness of boundaries whenever they're around people. Maybe just don't do your big fancy dressage test and expect them to look soft-eyed when they're kind of, there's a whole bunch going on, but still have a soft horse that makes good decision and not over impulsive, bite someone or kick someone or all that sort of stuff. You know, that's not acceptable. So yes, they do need to be addressed in those emotional states. They need to be worked and educated, but maybe you're just not doing as much with them of the stuff that you want to do.
Okay, and the final question for today is from Em from Australia as well. And she would like to know, what's the best way to load an unknown horse into a float in an urgent situation? Is it a matter of whatever works in the moment, just deal with the consequences later? She picks up a lot of rescue horses. She doesn't have the luxury of time. Have you got any tips for her?
No, I appreciate that question, Em, and I was talking to a trainer the other day we were actually talking about how he can he trains a lot of race horses and stuff, and he doesn't have the luxury of time, but how he would like to sort of show people how you can do it in a good way without having to wait forever. And there's a lot of people in the professional game that, you know, we don't just have all those hours to sit out there and do certain things. And but you still got to get a, you know, maybe like yourself, you know, you pick up rescue horses, you help pick up rescue horses and that. And, you know, the safest thing for that horse is to get it out of that environment and get it sort of fed or whatever you have to do. Get it away from the owners, whatever, you know, whatever situation it is in. And it means it has to transport somewhere else. So the biggest thing, and I got away with this over the years because I've had to pick up all the years of starting horses. I had to pick up wild horses. I had to pick up all sorts of horses, transport them to be started. So, but back then I had a little truck I could just put them loose in. It was kind of like a cattle-style truck, so it was easy for them to just wander around and panic a bit, but they weren't at risk of flipping over in a little tight horse float and doing some major damage and then sort of have trauma for the rest of their life. So so I did all sorts of things to get horses on, and most of them were sort of using a cattle ramp or something and trying to get them up, follow another horse in and just sort of get them in at whatever so I could get home and educate them. If you are going to put a horse in at any cost, I would steer away. So I saw the float that you had the other day that may have been the one that you might want to pick up horses in. It's a newer angle load float. You can kind of make a float environment that is a bit bigger that you can just leave them in loose and, you know, close them in without sort of putting them tied in dividers and they get in a wreck. Okay, so if you are going to pick up horses and at any cost get them on, make sure that they're not in a position of getting in a big mess. So sometimes some horses that are just pull back horses and they still lead. If they've been handled, had ropes around them a bit and they're not too scared, sometimes I've used a breeching rope to help them go in. But for everybody listening to this, if you put a breeching rope on a horse, you could cause a horse to kick out and anything like that, and you know that it's going to kick. But why the breeching rope, if it's going to be okay, if it's going to work with a horse and not cause more problems, is sometimes better, is because it teaches the horse to yield to sort of pressure around it, which means it's going to be better inside that environment, in a tighter environment. So sometimes on the young horses and stuff that I've had to load without doing a lot of lessons, I just put a breeching rope and help with the breeching rope, and sometimes that little bit of pressure from behind helps them just step up into the float. But the float that I used to have was a float that there was less risk of any danger of anything happening while they were loaded. The other option really is walking them up in the cattle ramp, but you need a cattle-style truck or something that they can be loose in, because there's no point going through a cut corner way of loading a horse into a straight load float, because the consequence, like what you say, you'll deal with the consequence later. You won't be able to deal with the consequence of a horse flipping over backwards in a float and just getting in a wreck. So you just wish you never loaded it. So for everyone out there, and you that's listening to this, is if you have to load a horse, however, make sure you load it on something that's not going to cause a catastrophe. So sort that out first if you're going to go and pick up, you know, rescue horses all the time. So set the float up. You can set a three-horse angle load up with a little bit of engineering here and there to be okay to sort of put rescue horses in without having as many dividers and stuff like that, that they can step up in there and stay loose. Sometimes I'll just have the long stick. I used to lead with and just tap with a long stick. Sometimes just tapping that hind quarter up just helps them step up in, because, you know, some horses take a lot of good quality leading to get leading up in there. Sometimes just let them follow another horse in. Go in with a horse, tap. There's many, many different ways that I've tried. You know, I've done from picking one foot up at a time to get them in, all that sort of stuff, just to get them in. I'm not going to sort of say to everyone all these different ways, but main thing, make sure that float's safe.
So we know you're trying to do the right thing, Emma, and sort of a lot of credit to you for putting yourself out massively to help all these horses out there. Hopefully you can find a slightly easier transport solution.
The hardest thing around floats is, no matter what pressure you put on, if it's badly, not even badly applied, if they're not ready for it and they're really frightened of a confined space, it's very easy, even if you're waving a flag, popping a flag till they search in. When they search in, you take the pressure away. And if you did it like that, or you did it with a breaching rope, whatever way you chose near a float, it's very easy for them to shut the pressure down, shut out to it all, because their fear of going in overrides anything out there that you can kind of do.
Mm.
So, you know, so that's the thing. So the bigger the open, the bigger the float, the more open it feels, the more likely the horse will go in there like it's just another place.
Yeah.
So you know, that's where I could get away with more things that wouldn't shut the horse down. But if it's a little tight float, they'll shut down to anything. You know, there's horses that have been flat shut down to people dragging, flogging them, all sorts of things that you see at shows and stuff that you don't want to ever see.
Mm-hmm.
And the horse is just kind of just shut down to it all. So, you know, so if the horse is shutting out, what I say, if the horse is shutting out any pressure or anything and it's just looks like it's not searching, you're best off just going away and not, you know, to come back again, get it leading, do something, and don't do it in that 1 hour that you've got, because it sometimes, as I say, you don't want to deal with something later that is going to be a lot worse because of what you did.
Yeah, be on your mind. That's right. Good luck and best of luck with that. I hope you can find a solution to and perhaps look at some transport that's going to make your job a lot easier and a lot safer for the horses that you're dealing with. Thank you very much for the questions that have come through, and we will leave it there for today. But Mark will be back again next week. Thank you so much, Mark.
Thanks, Jenny. Thanks, everybody.
You've been listening to Australia's very own Mark Langley, a horseman with many insights from his decades of dabbling. Jump online to keep learning. marklangley.com.au